Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Hearts.
How goes it?
We're here. We're there. Sorry we didn't have an episode last week. It was my birthday.
Yeah.
And I was just busy prior to that. And so, like, trying to get my stuff together for the case was just
difficult. It's a lot of work that goes into each week, as I'm sure many of you can assume. I mean, you know, we want to make sure we bring you the right information or accurate information. So it takes a while. So Cassie didn't hard on her birthday. So
yeah.
So we just took the week off and that was much needed, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. So, oh, there we are. Do you hear Wick chewing on his toy?
Nope.
Okay, good. It sounds loud to me, but I'm like, okay.
I know I put my dogs away and I'm hoping that that stays the case and that they don't start.
I know I probably should have, but I let him be. So we'll see.
You know what? It's fine. I usually let him be. And then I always feel guilty because I'm like, oh gosh, we have to edit it now. The sound because of my damn dog.
If it's a super loud bark, I'll edit it out. But if it's ones that aren't terribly loud, our listeners get to hear the dogs.
Yeah. And that's fine because we love our dogs. So
yes.
Yeah,
yes, we do.
All right.
Do you have a mini case?
Oh yeah. Okay, so this one, it's funny because after our last episode that we did where I talked about Lauren Spearer missing in Indiana, I had like all these people comment, and I don't know if you did either too or not, but people after I posted something like on my own personal Facebook, people were like, oh my gosh, what do you think about these women that are missing from Oklahoma and the two women that had been all over the news for a while. And if you don't know about this, I am very shocked, Cassie, because it's been huge in the news. I bet you do. I think you will maybe when I start talking about it.
Okay.
I had multiple people and it makes me laugh. First of all, thank you people that ask us because I love that like people think we just know. Like people are like, so what did they said, what are your guys' take on this? And I was like, well, we haven't really talked about it. And then weird connection. One of the women that was missing has a connection to McCook, Nebraska. And my mom actually knows someone who is a cousin of hers. So like, it's just a weird thing. So kind of the back here story, I believe this was on the day that these two women went missing. I think it was March. I didn't pull up the beginning of this because I assumed, here we go. Okay. March 30th, they disappeared. So the two women we're talking about here, it's, let me get their names just so I don't say them wrong. Veronica Butler was 27 and Jillian Kelly, 39. So Veronica Butler was going to pick up her kids who were with their dad at the time. They were going through a very, very ugly custody battle. Jillian, who was her friend and also somebody who was approved to supervise visits and the exchanging of the children and stuff, was with her. So these two women were in Oklahoma. They leave to go get the kids, never pick up the kids, completely gone, vanished. I don't know how many days later it was, but the police find their vehicle and it was abandoned on the side of this highway, kind of a rural part of like Oklahoma. It's in Texas County. So it's kind of confusing because at first I was are we in Texas? Are we in Oklahoma?
Right.
But so all they really released from that was that there was the evidence of foul play, but the women obviously were not there. So then this goes on for, it was like a couple weeks that they were missing. And I just like, it made me so sick because they're young. I mean, so then as of, I think it was just this past Saturday, they arrested four people, and their mugshots are just like disgusting. They all look like they're smiling in them. But one of the women arrested was 54-year-old Tiffany Adams, who happens to be the father of the children's mother. So grandma. So her boyfriend, and then these other two people who were in their 40s that I don't know the relation, they were all arrested and they were all charged with two counts of first degree murder and kidnapping and one count of conspiracy to commit first degree murder. And I went down a rabbit hole on Saturday night when I saw that because they didn't have bodies yet or anything. I read some absolutely horrible things. At one point, somebody had said that the boyfriend of the grandma was a butcher and had pigs or something. Thank God. I don't think that is the case because then, I don't know if it was just yesterday or if it was Sunday, but they did find two bodies. They I mean, pretty much are, they're pretty certain that's who they are. They haven't positively, like, you know, identified them ID'd and stuff, them yet. But they are fairly certain that that is who they are. And they think this was all over just the ugly custody battle. So all four of the suspects belong to an anti-government group called God's Misfits. So they would meet regularly at a home, and they allegedly had tried to kill Veronica Butler before, according to a witness. So police say they're not looking for any other suspects in this, but it was a 14-day thing that they've been missing since. And so it was one of those things that I was just like, were they like, was it like sex trafficking? Was right. it, you know,
and they didn't really say. I missed this. It's been on nationwide. Like the social media and stuff. Yeah. Hey, I haven't been on good, a though. Lot of stuff lately.
Yeah.
But so like, was ex-husband involved? Like conspiracy?
I don't know. I never read anything on that. Like, I feel like he almost would have to. I mean,
especially mom because, could have taken it into her yeah, own hands. That's kind of what I thought decided to do it. I don't know though.
Yeah. And I didn't see very much about him really at all. Most of it was focused on just the grandma. We'll just call her yeah. the grandma. But they did say that when they had looked through her phone, there was search for taser pain level, gun shops, prepaid cell phones, and how to get someone out of their house. And she actually had purchased 5 stun guns at a local gun shop a week before the women disappeared. She also bought several burner phones, and all 3 phones were at the area where the car was located. And that was the last known location of both of the women. So, they said they have tons of evidence, so I'm sure we'll see that play out.
Yeah.
But it's awful. Not only for that mom, I mean, the mother of the children, because now these kids are left with nobody. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
But then the bystander, and her friend yeah. who's just like a bystander.
Yeah. And she, like she's a pastor's wife and all this. I think she was just a really good, like helpful person and wanted to help the situation and be there for this, you know, like kind of like a mentor, like type situation is kind yeah. of how I took it because she was, you know, what, 15 years older? I don't know. But, yeah, absolutely disgusting. So that is my story. And for everyone that was asking what we thought about it, I kind of was just waiting to even see what happened because they were holding that yeah. information pretty close. And so, but yeah, the picture of these people, they just look like trash and they look like they're proud of themselves, which makes it even that much more disgusting. So
I'm curious though, like what evidence they have and stuff, because like how did they stop these women? You know what I mean? Like they had to have known their route if they didn't meet them at his house or the yeah. designated area. Like if they were meeting at his house, but it was a designated area. And like, did they show up and he didn't, but he did.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it makes me feel like he had to have been part of it.
Right.
But were they like, did he have enough evidence?
Yeah. Were they trying to like get them to go to a different area to meet where they could ambush them?
Right.
I don't know. I read somewhere too. I just pulled up the latest article in case there was yeah. like anything new, but I had read somewhere too about, bullet casings being found possibly. So I don't know what it was, but I mean, yeah. if anything, I hope it was just a very quick thing for those women because how, yeah. And how awful for these children. But I did see where it said that they had taken these kids into custody, like immediately away from any kind of relationship.
So that makes me wonder if they are still looking into dad then too,
yeah.
because I'm sure if mom's whole point was that she wanted her son to have sole custody, she's mm-hmm. not going to out him as having part of it because then he still would.
Right.
But it's, then, yeah.
I don't know. And so the group on Facebook, I think you're in the group. I want to say, I'm pretty sure it tagged you. It's like a true crime.
Oh, I don't even yes. know what I kind of it skimmed it. Yep. I know what you're
but
talking
like,
about.
Like, yep. Yeah. There was a group, or they always do several threads on different cases and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they always link like everybody involved, like their Facebook page. So I
yeah.
had looked at like the grandma's Facebook page and she had all these pictures posted of the grandkids and stuff. And I thought like, did you think you were doing them a favor? Because now they're never going to see you again, which clearly is probably for the best because you're
crazy. 100%.
But
yeah.
like, it was just sad, you know, the whole thing is sad and scary when it's just something that's probably a normal situation for many people going to exchange your children with a custody agreement. And
yeah, well, and grandma, yeah, like you said, grandma, obviously we're in a, obviously a conspiracy theorist,
yes,
like to the point where we're joining a group, like it's not a fun yeah. type of like, oh, I find this interesting. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like it's no, just no. very trash, trash.
Yes.
And sad, but ew. That yeah. was my case for the day. So
okay. I'm gonna have to
you have to go look it up more. And we'll have to mm-hmm. yeah, and we'll keep you guys updated, I guess, if anything major happens with it. I think it's thankfully they already have custody of the suspects and all that, so hopefully it's just kind of
matter
done and over with. Yeah,
yeah, and finding out if dad had anything
yeah
yep. to do with it.
Yeah, we'll see. So
those poor children.
I know, and they're like you know, I don't know. I can't remember what the ages were, but they looked, you know, like 8 and 10-ish maybe. Yeah. So young.
Ugh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So well, on that note, yeah. what do you, it's probably heartbreaking for us today. Yeah.
Well, and then I realized too, because I was looking at a case. I was like, oh, it's Indiana. I was like, oh wait, that you literally just did that.
It's okay though. You know, you could have done it again.
And then I was like, well, we haven't done Iowa in a while. So I was looking at yeah. Iowa and I found this case and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this one. And then I realized as I'm going, you did a disappearance case that's unsolved last week.
That's okay. I know. And that's, that, I
this
like
is about to be another unsolved
You know case. What, though? Some of those are very intriguing because it really makes your mind go down different roads. And sometimes that's all it takes for something new to come out or someone to think of something in a different way that we didn't or, you know.
Right.
I like them. I mean, I don't like them. That's the wrong choice
I know what
of
you
words.
Mean. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
We know what you mean.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, yeah. So this week we're going to be in Mason City, Iowa. And actually, we're getting close to next year will be the 30-year mark for Jody Husentruitt's disappearance.
30. Wow.
So, yeah. So Jody was a 27-year-old news anchor working at KIMT in Mason City, Iowa. She was born in Long Prairie, Minnesota on June 5th of 1968. She was the youngest. I don't really know how many siblings. Like, I watched a 2020 episode. It was season 44, episode 13 from 2022. Mm-hmm. That'll be in the show notes. You can watch it on Hulu. But, like, I watched and they interviewed her sister. And, like, they don't talk about other siblings, but, like, mm-hmm. nothing's mentioned. So if there was another, I don't know. But I think they had, like, a 10-year age gap or maybe mm-hmm. more.
Wow.
But I mean, her sister said nothing but good things about her. Right. And everyone said she was like a very bubbly personality. She ran in a lot of different like social circles. So it sounds like she got along with pretty much everybody. A close friend of hers who was also interviewed on the show stated she'd always wanted to be like a news anchor journalist, like in that type of journalism. She said she actually really admired Connie Chung, who at that time frame was like one of the top news anchor women at the time. And so Jody's goal was to be like one of the top one or, you know, top mm-hmm. three news anchor women in the country. And they do actually, it's kind of interesting because in that 2020 episode, they have a ton of different journalists on there also talking, you know, and they discuss yeah. how like to do this, you had to like start as an intern and like work your way up. Mm-hmm. And that's what she was doing.
Yeah, I think it's like a super competitive field. I don't think just anybody. I mean, clearly when you watch a local news and you see some of them, you're like, no, I don't think this was your call.
Yes.
But good for you.
Yes. yeah. But like her professors in college and stuff even talked about like how this, like she put her all into it. It wasn't just yeah. showing up to classes for the sake of like, let's get this over with so I can get on. Like she put her all into everything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so she did. So she'd interned at a place in Minnesota for a while and a couple other places. And then she landed this job at Mason City. And she actually had a morning show with a co-host. And she helped produce it too. So like she had her producer, and it was like her producer, her and the co-host. And mind you, this is a 6 a.m. airtime. So yeah. she would often leave her apartment by 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Because she's
that's
helping,
gross.
You know, she's not the main producer, but she's helping produce it. It's really yeah. just the three of them. And then like the production crew.
Well, and you think about like to be on the news, I mean, they kind of expect a good, I mean, you know, a full face of makeup probably
yes.
and all that. So like you have to get up extra early to get ready yeah. for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she did the 6 a.m. morning show, and then she'd also do an afternoon program. And then they said, like, she was out of there by, like, 1:25. She was out. She was gone, you know, like,
yeah, got
that was her thing.
And then,
yeah. So on the morning of June 27th, 1995, Jody received a phone call from her producer, Amy Coons, at 4 a.m. And now, like I said, typically Jody's out of the house by like 3 a.m. in order to be at work on time. And Amy talks about how, like, you know, because she's interviewed too, and she's like, this is a really early time. So they kind of had this unspoken mm-hmm. agreement that if one of them wasn't there by 4 a.m., they called each other.
Yeah. And this is before cell phones too. So like,
yes,
mm-hmm. you would assume I think they kind of have a few,
but yeah.
Yeah. Like you would just assume that they're probably on their way or something. Yeah.
Yes. So she calls her, Jody does answer this initial phone call at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my goodness, what time is it? You know, she's like, okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Cause she actually lived really close to the station.
Nice.
And Amy said that typically if she was running late, what she would do is she would take a quick shower and just bring everything with her and actually get ready at the studio. Mm-hmm. Cause then she can multitask, right?
Yeah. Totally.
If they have to go over the stories for the day or whatever, she's there putting on her full makeup, hair dryer, all that fun stuff. Right. So, you know, she's like, cool. But by 4:30, she's not in. So Amy tries calling her again. This time she gets her voicemail. She's like, hey, did you fall back asleep? Are you on your way? Like, you really need to get here. 5 a.m. Still no Jody. Amy calls again, gets a voicemail again. It's like, girl, wake up. Did you fall back asleep? Yeah. Like, what's going on? And I kind of feel bad for Amy because I guess a lot of people were like, why didn't you call the police sooner?
Yeah.
But you have no reason necessarily to think. I'm like,
just because she didn't answer her phone. Yeah, that could have been she stopped and got coffee. And which, I mean, I guess when you know someone, you kind of know more about how they are. But still.
But
you don't ever assume the worst. I mean, right away. Well, maybe now we do. But
I'll also say, though, that like Amy, or not Amy, Jody was in a golf tournament the day prior. Like she worked, she did the afternoon show. And then after the afternoon show, she then went and did this golf tournament representing the news station. And then she went to the like dinner thing afterwards at this country club. And multiple people say she didn't leave till 8 p.m. So if you think about that, woman's got to be tired. If she was up at like 2:30 and it's like 8 p.m. already, like,
right.
Maybe she did just like she was drained and she fell back asleep. So I can see why Amy would just be like, okay, you know. So Amy goes on. She takes her place on air. And then when the
because she still has a responsibility too. So like the news has to go on. They don't just cancel the news.
Exactly. And you know, at this point, she's probably just thinking she fell back asleep. She's really heavily sleeping, right?
Yeah.
So that airs from 6 to 7 a.m. So she tries calling after the show again, still no response. And this is when she does call the police for a wellness check. Cause I think at this point she's kind of like, okay, if she had fallen back asleep, there's no way she wouldn't be waking up now at this point.
Yeah. And right? calling and letting you know or showing up.
Yes.
Yeah.
So police get their prompt, like they're there right away, which Mason City is a pretty small town, at least at that time. I think it was fairly small as well. So police probably was easy to get there. Cause I think they said they were on the scene by like 7:10 a.m. And as they're walking up, they see Jody's red Mazda Miata in the parking lot. So as they're walking up to it, they notice a bunch of her stuff is strewn around it. They notice the side mirrors bent backwards. Her car key, like she'd been trying to get in, unlock the car, was on the ground and bent. Files were thrown around, hair stuff. And they do notice her red high heels in the ground and there are drag marks. So they immediately are like, okay, Jody did not leave willingly.
I remember just hearing that part and how like scary and what a sight to see too.
Yes. And so mind you, Jody is a single woman living in this apartment. They're the key apartments. There is like a river right behind her apartments. And then like 100 feet away is like an RV campground area and stuff too. So immediately police get other local, like around surrounding area police officers to help search and local volunteers. They start dredging, you know, the river and stuff. They also go inside. And I will say, I was telling Shannon before we recorded, there are so many theories with this case. I'm not going to go over all of them. I'm kind of just highlighting some of the main ones that came 30 out.
30 years. Yeah, that's a lot.
And the ones that have come out, like a couple of them have been disproved too, but they're still being thrown out there. So I briefly mentioned that. We'll get to that. I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. But anyways, so one of the things is they go into her apartment and they find a couple beer cans in the sink and two empty wine glasses. Hmm. So people assume someone was there that night. However, like they interview the current detective, like this man took over in 2010. And he was like, the problem is there's no way to determine when these wine glasses were used. She could have used one the night before. Mm-hmm. That one had been that night. You know, he said the one thing that he still hung on to that was questionable to him was the toilet seat was up in her bathroom.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah. Which I mean, like, all the way, like both seat, like the seat, right, like was up, not the lid, like a man would. Yeah.
Did she have a boyfriend? I don't remember if that's...
No. So as far as anyone knew, she was single.
Okay. And she was just at this thing the night before too. So like maybe she met someone there or right. Someone.
No one mentions her leaving with anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
But that is not to say they couldn't have met up later or something. Yeah. But so that is, you know, they can't definitively say, yes, someone was in this place the night prior. But the detective was like, that one still throws me off.
Yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah. They do also recover a partial palm print. I don't know if it was on the car or where they found it, but it was among the things. So that's something that they still have in evidence, right? They also immediately start canvassing the neighborhood, talking to neighbors and people and trying to get witnesses. Multiple people mentioned hearing screaming at 4:30 a.m., but no one called the police.
Yeah, that's probably a red flag. If you hear someone screaming in the middle of the afternoon, like that wouldn't even strike me as much as that early in the morning. Like to me, I would think, what the hell is going on?
Right.
You know?
There was like, they show an old news clip of this older gentleman being interviewed at the time. And he's like, I was going through my mail. I was like, you were going through your mail at 4:30 in the morning?
Yeah, Mr. Sir. No. What do you
Why didn't you do that the night before when you got your mail? And also, but like, why?
Why?
And I mean, he was that old enough that like, you know, it's like when people, it's like once you hit a certain age, it's like you start waking up earlier and earlier.
Yes. I know old people that are up at like 4. It's like, ew.
Yeah. So it wasn't even the fact that like he was up that early. Yeah. I was just like, why were you going through your mail then?
Yeah. Like have a cup of coffee and like something. Just read the paper. Is the paper all good? I don't know when that
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
So like at the time, so eventually, and I think this is years later, I don't know exactly when, but it sounds like it was quite a few years later. And I don't know who this woman told, but the lady who lived across the hall from her, eventually she either told a PI or there is a group of like retired journalists who've created findjody.com. I don't know who she told, but she says that she heard a man banging on her door, on Jody's door around 8:30 p.m. and like for several minutes saying, I know you're in there, open up, that type of stuff. But like the detective is like, you know, it's so hard because people's memories get hazy, but we kind of have to go with what they told us immediately. And that wasn't said.
Yeah.
Immediately.
I feel like that's something you would remember. Like that's something like, you would bring up right away.
Not to disparage anyone by any means, maybe she somehow blocked it out, but this seems more to me like you want to feel important and insert yourself into the case a little bit. You're like, oh well, I was her neighbor and so I'm gonna, you know what I mean, like
and just making things up. It's like that's not helpful or productive when it's not true and you're just wasting time. And I feel like the more time that goes by, it's like you want to preserve all this evidence and stuff can change, so it's
but then it also makes you think like, did she make herself even believe that she heard that? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's so hard to say.
Yeah. You want to have heard something. So
yes.
The mind can be crazy like that. But
yes. So police do believe it was more than likely someone Jody knew, because like there was no real concerns of her having a stalker in October, like prior to this June. She did make partial police report about a white truck following her while she was jogging. And the thing is like news anchors, TV personalities, like that is a very real issue for them, is having stalkers. Totally. Like there
people
have
know who you are. You're like the local celebrities in town.
And they think they know you, you know, and like there are news reporters who have been killed by stalkers. You know, lots of famous people have. You
and
know
she's
what I mean?
Young, she's cute, she's blonde. It's all the things. Like very easily could have been stalked.
Yeah.
And the not one even thing, known.
Exactly. But the one thing is, like, the reason why police lean more towards this being someone she knew instead of a stalker is a stalker is going to know your schedule, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to go based off of that, not who you are as a person and stuff. And so the police are like, she normally would have been out of her apartment by around 3 a.m.
True.
No stalker is going to wait.
And come way, later.
An hour.
Yeah.
You know, for that. Like,
how do they know that she doesn't work that day or something?
Yeah. You know, anything could have happened. So, because they do believe she was taken between 4:10 and 4:30 a.m. So, in all of these things, there are two men who Jody knew from a bar she frequented, and it was called The Other Place, whose names often kind of come up in her case. The first, who I'm just going to go over quickly, was Bill Pruitt. He was a regular at this bar, so they would have at least known each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were really friends or not, but on April 6th of 1995, he was found in his home with a bullet hole through his chest. And initially it was ruled a suicide, but a lot of people didn't buy that, especially because, like, the angle of how he would have had to have held the gun, it didn't work.
Rare. I feel like if people are going to do that, usually they do in their head or something, or mouth,
Well, but and his
not
daughters,
always, but...
yeah. And, like, he was a divorced man. So they actually think he died on April 4th and he wasn't found for 2 days. And his daughters were like, he bought a brand new tractor that day. We had seen him. She was like,
Doesn't sound like a guy that was going to take his own life.
No indications of that. So they do actually eventually hire a PI. So a year later, the medical examiner then switches the cause of death from suicide to undetermined cause of death. Police, I guess, have always kept it in their report as a suicide. But the daughters hire...
Sometimes.
Yeah, yep. The daughters hire a PI, and what they all believe happened was he had his gun outside, he was coming inside, and he slipped, and it was an accidental discharge. And so the only reason why I'm bringing him up is because then a lot of people theorize that Jody was investigating his death, right? That her disappearance had something to do with his death, because, you know, all of this, like, everyone was like, there's no way this was a suicide, you know? And so then they think she got too close to something and it made her disappear. But his daughters are adamant that wasn't the case. So, like, our father died accidentally. He didn't take his own life. This wasn't a murder. Like, you do a disservice to his memory trying to link him to her. And they're like, and also it doesn't do Jody any good to try to link this together. They have nothing to do to each other with each other. And so that's the only reason why I wanted to bring this up, is because, like, the daughters and that were like, we just want people, like, we're still people, and, like, people trying to drag our dad into this case, like, is not helping anyone.
No, like, let us just, move on.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's sad.
Yes. And, like, one of the other theories is that she was investigating, like, drugs in the area, because I guess meth was a big thing at the time in Mason City. But all of her friends and coworkers are like, Jody wasn't interested in investigative journalism. She never said anything to anyone about her friend. You know, she was never like, oh, my friend Bill, like, they're saying it. You know, that she never brought anything up to anyone about investigating these things or these people. And that's where, again, they were like, when the show wrapped up in the afternoon, she was out by, like, 1:15, 1:25. If you're investigating that stuff, you're staying there. You're using the resources there.
Yeah.
And so that also seems highly unlikely. Now, the second man whose name comes up from this bar is John Van Sice. And he was a 49-year-old, like, he sold seeds or something. Corn seeds, maybe. Yeah.
Iowa stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Midwest stuff, you know.
Yeah, so, in general, yeah.
Yeah, he frequented the bar a lot, and he actually, the weekend prior to Jody's disappearance, he, along with Jody and some other friends, went out on his boat and went water skiing. And he had actually thrown her a birthday party for her 27th birthday and stuff too, right?
Okay.
So, and the other thing is, like, the name of his boat was Jody. The detective even says he doesn't know if that was named prior to her disappearance or after, as, like,
a
tribute
type thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though, and kind of weird if he's 20 years her senior. Okay.
Uh-huh. So then the other thing is, the morning of Jody's disappearance, he showed up at her apartments while police are there and told them, like, that. They hadn't been on the scene for very long. It was like maybe 8 a.m. He shows up and he's like, I was the last person to see Jody.
Yeah. I remember that, thinking that was odd.
Dude. Yeah. And so police are like, okay. So he is cooperative at first and he talks to them. So what he tells police is that, as I said, remember, Jody had been at that event at the country club. It's important to remember, multiple eyewitnesses state they saw her leave at 8 p.m. Now, her apartment was only a couple minutes away. John's apartment was at least 10 minutes away. So he says she came over after this event to watch a videotape he had of her birthday party. And that videotape was 15 minutes long. So he said then they chatted for a minute and she left. The thing is there's a problem with his story because the timeline doesn't match up for when police know for a fact Jody was home. Because at 8:24 p.m. the night prior, Jody made a long-distance phone call to one of her good friends. And now her friend wasn't home, but she still talked to his husband for several minutes about that water skiing trip she had had the weekend prior. So if they had watched that film in its entirety, that would have been 8:25 p.m. That's assuming she left at 8, she gets there at 8:10, and they immediately start watching it. It's 8:25. And then she leaves immediately after.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if we're thinking logically, it would probably have been, if she went this route, it would have been after 9 p.m. when she got home, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, but the problem is we don't know if police ever called him out
on that
and how that timeline didn't work.
Like, and, is this some weird obsession thing? Like,
A lot of people, it sounds like they interviewed one of his friends, LaDonna, and like, I guess they went for walks every morning. And so from like 6:30 to 7:45, they were walking together, but they think she was taken at 4 a.m. around 4:30. He has no alibi for that. He was like, well, I was at home sleeping. There's no alibi. But you know, LaDonna says that he didn't have a sexual like desire for her. Yeah. She's like, I think it was more of this protective thing. Like, he saw how she was living her life and he knew, you know, and stuff like that. And I will say they have Jody's diary that she had been keeping and he comes up a lot in it, but like, there's nothing like any relationship or anything like that. They were like, on her end, it seems like a fatherly kind of friendship figure. And so, you know, that's a tough one because on the one hand, you're like, okay, but your timeline.
Right.
And stuff. I don't
know. Why lie about that too? Like, there's no reason to lie about that if you have nothing to hide.
No.
And why are you volunteering this information unless you're afraid of getting caught? And so you want to get your story out there first before they come to you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the detective says on 2020 that John actually took two polygraph tests, but he can't say whether or not he passed them or not. But again, we know polygraph tests are kind of, you know.
That doesn't mean anything. Really.
They don't mean anything.
It's just more interesting to see, like, I don't even know why they waste time with it anymore. But
I mean, you know, sometimes you can kind of trick people into, like, giving a confession. But
that's fair.
In 2017, then, John was subpoenaed before a grand jury and made to give his fingerprints and his palm prints. And also, by this point, he had stopped talking to police because he's being persecuted. He's being judged, you know, by everyone in town. I guess he had a girlfriend at the time of Jody's disappearance who broke up with him because she couldn't be sure he didn't have something to do with it. Which I'm also like, I don't know, that's kind of telling too. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, I don't know how long they'd been together, how much they knew each other. It's just a tough situation. Yeah,
that's interesting.
So I will say, so they get his prints and his palm print, right? But nothing ever comes up. He's never indicted as like a person of interest. So
that's kind of weird too, though. Like, you would think just being the last person to see her would almost make you a person of interest until you're completely ruled out. But I don't think they have enough.
And that's just it. Like, we don't know if they did call him out on the timeline thing. Like, there's a lot of information police haven't given up because I think they're still holding on to that for the sake of if they find someone. In 2019, John did put out a statement via like a secondhand person, mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a lawyer or what, saying that, you know, he'd been living in a suspended hell because everyone assumed he had something to do with it or he knew something about it, which I don't know that he had something to do with it, but I feel like maybe he knows more than he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he also stated that he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So, I mean,
that puts a whole wrench in everything then. Yes. Because, like, how early on was that?
At this point, you know, 2019. Too. Yeah. And in 2019, then, I think they said it was like a moderate, like at a point, like it wasn't like, it was enough to be concerned about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a John Van Slice way. I don't know. I mean, that's so difficult.
Interesting. That one is mm-hmm. weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. He's one that I'm like, I don't know. You know, another person who was brought up as a possible suspect was Tony Jackson. And again, I'm going to be brief on this one because police did rule him out. Uh-huh. But I think on the findjody.com website, like, as of that airing of 2020 and mm-hmm. 2022, they still had him linked as a possible suspect in their site. So in 1996, he was arrested for a string of rapes in, I want to say it was Minnesota. And he did actually happen to live in Mason City at the time of Jody's disappearance. Hmm. So an informant came forward that said that Jackson had been bragging about killing this female news anchor mm-hmm. and made up a rap. And, like, he wrote out the rap. It's weird. They have it on there. But essentially, I'm not going to say the rap or anything like that, but, like, essentially it led them to believe that he drove to Tillon, Iowa, which was several hours away, and buried her body in this silo, which I'm like, this inmate dude had to have been familiar with the area because, like, a thing is mentioned about, like, the grave road or the road, which there's a cemetery something. And there's a silo uh-huh. and it's all in the wrap, and they search the silo. There's nothing, you know, in it except for, like, raccoon bones and stuff like that. And, you know, Jackson did actually purchase a car the day prior to his disappearance, and it did have a ton of mileage. Like, he put a lot of miles on it.
Interesting. He doesn't seem smart enough, though, to, like, get rid of it with no trace. But go ahead.
Yes. So then the other issue is another investigator. So there was an investigative journalist who, she heard about this, and she dug into it. And, like, she wrote to him. And, like, he had never heard about it. She contacted him. And he didn't know about Jody's case until she contacted him. He's like, please don't put my name with this because I'm not going to get a fair trial then.
No shit.
And she did. He actually sued her and the findjody.com. And those got thrown out. But I think he sued findjody.com again because they still had him listed even after police were like, no.
No. Yeah.
Because then this other investigative journalist with 2020 was like, there's no record of him. Like, yes, they were in there at the same time, but there's no record that they would have had contact with each other. Uh-huh. And this other informant inmate is dead now.
Of course, because it's been so long. It's like,
yes. So Tony Jackson actually did an interview that was on 2020. And the thing is he was very much open about the fact that he did, in fact, commit these rapes. Mm-hmm. But he's like, was adamant that he did not commit these murders. He's like, people assume that because you did this, then you're also capable of murder. And he's like, and that's not the case. He's like, I was in a really dark and bad place at the time. I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I couldn't stop myself. Mm-hmm. He was like, I literally prayed to God to be stopped. And I was, he was like, but I had nothing to do with Jody. And the detective on the case even says he does not believe that Tony Jackson had anything to do with mm-hmm. it. I'm sure they got his fingerprints and stuff, and I think none of it matches. There's no DNA. His DNA doesn't match anything that they have.
Well, and he sounds remorseful about his other crimes that he committed. So, like, at this point, I feel like, why would he hold back? I mean,
right. Like, if he had been part of that, anyway. Like, yes. So, you know, and he even says, he's like, I've never been to Tillon, Iowa. He's like, that's one of those small towns that if a black man were to stop there, everyone would know. He's like, right. And with how far it was, he's like, I would have had to have stopped for gas.
Yeah. And people would have seen him, and they would have made sure everybody knew. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the current detective was like, you know, I can't explain the mileage on his car, but, like, he's not a suspect. So let's get that name out of there too. Right.
Yeah.
So then there was another sex offender who lived in Minnesota, but like close to the border, and he often went to Mason City. And again, I'm not going to get into him, but with his rap sheet, I don't know how this man wasn't in prison for life, like much sooner. Like his first conviction was like in the 70s.
Jeez.
And I'm like, dude, how again? It's just right. So gross. And so like a year after Jody's disappearance, his ex-wife like put him forth as someone who could have been part of it, because his name was Thomas Korskaden, something like that. I don't know. He had a white van. And the thing is like the police were searching for someone with a white van, because once Jody's disappearance became known, a citizen came forth and said, hey, I was actually driving by those apartments that morning around 4 a.m. I noticed a white van, which we all know the van, right? The kidnapper van.
Yeah, that's my daughter's biggest fear, she informed me, is white vans. I was like, okay, great. At least you know not to get in one.
Yes. But so he noticed that in his parking lot. And the reason why he noticed is because like the brake lights were still on and stuff. Like the car wasn't shut off. It was parked, but like the park lights or whatever were on. And like it just seemed weird.
At that time, especially.
And so he was like, so once they came forth and they were like, hey, if anyone has information around this time, he was like, hey, I saw this. So they were looking for this car. So he did have this. And the thing is Korskaden was like, would brag about it, say he did it, all this stuff. But then when they were like, yeah, okay, we're going to get your fingerprints and DNA and make you take a polygraph, like he was like adamant, didn't want to all this. So they're like, okay, this has to be our person, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in 2004, he was cleared.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. So... yeah, so the current detective, like, on 2020 mentions that he believes he knows who did it, but he's not going to say until he's, you know, putting handcuffs on him. He says him, or he goes, or her. I'm like, okay, listen, it's probably a man. But also,
you
probably can't even say anyways, because one, you probably don't have enough information, like, because then it's defamation if you throw out their name and you don't have enough evidence.
Yep.
But all, you know, I'm like, because otherwise I'm like, if you haven't even brought them in to talk to them as a person of interest, like, you probably don't have enough yet.
Nah. He probably just likes having that power over them, too, a little bit, you know, knowing that there's nothing they can do about it, really.
Yep. Jody's family, they did declare, like, they had her legally declared dead in 2001. But her sister was like, that doesn't mean that we gave up on her, you know? And it sounds like more is probably just because they had to, like, deal with her legal estate reasons. Stuff and everything, legal reasons. But they hired a private investigator, too. I think they've hired several. But the current one, Steve Ridge, he's actually put up a $50,000 reward for anyone with information just leading to her body.
Yeah, that's, at this point, that's the least someone could do is just give them that closure. I mean... mm-hmm. Just to confirm, because you'll always wonder, was she trafficked? Like, is she, you know, she'd be in her late 50s now, right?
Yeah.
Like, gosh.
Well, she's 20. Yeah. So she'd be like 57 almost. So this PI also, he came out last year and said there's evidence that Jody was in a new relationship with someone for like 10 days prior to her disappearance. Hmm. And he believes that this has something to do with why she was taken. He said he doesn't think this man had anything to do with it, but he knows something probably. But it was such a new relationship that like her friends hadn't even known about it. But I guess they had spent like 5 or 6 days in a row together and stuff. Hmm. So we don't know anything about that either. And that's, I mean, like I said, that's all we have now. It's like, that's the case of Jody Houston Truitt.
Yeah, that's a wild case. I think
it is.
I watched that 2020 or Dateline or whatever you had said.
Yeah, it was 2020, which it looks like 48 Hours also did something in 2018.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Whatever. Probably the most recent one is the one I saw. And
yeah, it was 2020.
I had heard of that case, but I didn't know a lot of the details until I watched that. And then I kind of have forgotten until you just refreshed them and stuff. But I just think like missing cases are just so crazy. And it's like that unknown factor just eat you alive, you know? But
right. And like the thing is too, and like her sister's like, you know, I don't like the word closure. She goes, because obviously like that's always going to be something we live with, but they still want to know what happened to her, right? And like I said, there's so many theories and stuff that I could have gone over, but I just wanted to go with like the main things that we do know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to cloud the case with all of that, but there is a ton of different like podcasts and, like I said, 48 Hours 2020. And I know typically we don't cover things that have been covered this much, right. But I feel like Jodi's case is one of those that it's like hit or miss on if you know it.
It's old too. I mean, mm-hmm. because it is old, it's not as known. And I only just knew a little bit about it. And I was like, this is crazy. And I didn't realize how close to like home, you know, it was. Yes. And something mm-hmm. like that is just wild. And it's rare that, I mean, obviously there's missing cases all the time, but like usually at some point a body is found or something. And so like with this, it's like, how has 30 years gone by? And most people involved now are either dead or other issues. I mean, we're,
yeah,
you know, they don't know. They don't remember.
No. And that's just it, you know, and Mason City, that's a small town. Like, mm-hmm. there's someone out there that knows something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of getting them to come forward. And yeah, unfortunately, I think there is like, I mean, they've taken so many, and they showed on 2020 that they have like a room where her physical evidence is, and they have three mm-hmm. like tall filing cabinets full of stuff that's just
wow
on Jodi's case.
I mean, good for them. I'm glad that they collected all of that because, mm-hmm. you know, you never know when you right. really need to match it against something, but
yeah. Still. And like I said, I feel like there's stuff a lot that they haven't put forth. And it's kind of like at the point too, where you're like, okay, it's been almost 30 years. Like maybe there's some more information you need to give out
yeah.
for us yep. to be able to put forth. Because like, right. I'm curious as to why they won't say whether or not John passed his lie detector test or not, because yeah. like if he's not even listed as a person of interest, like
why would it also matter,
like
then?
Clear the poor man of that then right. like if you took his fingerprints and his palm print and they don't match up and everything yeah. like why are we still, like I said, like he's got some weird things with his case there, but at the same yeah. time I don't know that I believe that he did it.
It could just be that weird and ironic that these things have yeah. happened. Yeah.
But and maybe he got timelines picked up, messed yeah. up, or date, you know, I yeah. don't know. Or he wanted
maybe
to
he like panicked. Himself. Yeah. It could have been a thing like that too, where like, you know, now his friend is missing and he just wanted to be able to like say, I didn't have anything to do with it, but yes, I do want to know what's going on. So let me tell you this.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, it just seems weird to me that they can't even say whether or not he passed. And now we're yeah. at the point that I'm like, okay, 2019, he came out with having Alzheimer's. Highly unlikely that he, if he's still alive, that he's coherent enough to understand.
Right.
Or if they were like, yeah, we know it was him, but we can't prove it yet. And so we're not saying anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't even take him to trial now. And you've right. passed that point of being able to find out what happened.
Right. You know, and usually like money talks. And in this case, it's sad because I think too, a lot of people just in general are scared to come forward because they're just thinking they had any knowledge of the crime, they'll be charged with something. Mm-hmm. Even if it was like just they overheard something or they think they saw something. Right. I think it's just like human nature to be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get in trouble for this though. Am I going to, even if I come, you know, and that sucks
right.
too. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I can see why people would be scared to go forward if they heard something. And plus, you don't yeah. know, like, retaliation and, you know, all that kind
right.
of stuff.
Right. I mean, who so. Knows? Yeah. But, like, it had to have been, like they said, I highly doubt that this wasn't a crime of opportunity, I don't no. think. It definitely
especially at
like
that time in the morning. And mm-hmm. to leave very little behind. I mean, as far as evidence, you yeah. know, or DNA or anything like yeah. that.
I don't,
it's
I mean,
weird.
Yeah.
Because did you say there was blood or anything? Or did they find any of
no,
that? It was
just nothing stuff, has been right? said about blood. Yeah. They just noticed the drag marks from her heels uh-huh. being left, the bent, like the way everything was tossed uh-huh. around. They're like, we know she didn't go. But like I said, I mean, if there was blood, you know, they haven't said.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, I didn't think you had said that, but I figured I would ask no. in case. But
yeah,
that's interesting too. You think if there was some sort of struggle, but I mean, even just a scratch or something isn't
necessarily
gonna
leave much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And being outside, that could easily, and wind blows and something's gone. So
yep. So huh. yeah, that's Jodi Who's and Truitt.
Wow.
And I'll have linked in the show notes, and I actually made a graphic for, because there's going to be a couple pictures of Jodi for this week's stuff, and then I yeah. made a graphic that has the information of who you can contact if you have any tips.
I'm sure there's multiple things, just like yes. the last case we did.
Yep. And so that'll be in the show notes. Yeah. And that'll be on our socials as well, because there are several emails and stuff that you can go through. So check mm-hmm. there if you or anyone you know maybe has some information. And Yeah.
Crazy. So, wow.
What's your fun fact to...
It's not like overly exciting, but it makes sense because it's kind of on topic as far as doing a podcast. I'm sure you're like me. When I listen to our podcast, I cringe at the sound of my voice. I'm like, ew, do I sound like that? Yeah. Does anybody actually like the sound of their voice?
Yes. No.
Yeah. Nah. Turns out you don't like the sound of your own voice because of the bones in your head. It says this may be because the bones in our head make our voices sound deeper than it actually is.
Mm-hmm. I did know that, huh? Actually, but yeah, I hate
I did not.
Listening to my voice. Yeah. I have such a manly sounding voice.
I always am like, ew, do I sound like this all the time? You know, like asking people and they're like, yeah, you do. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry for anyone that has to listen.
I know. I'm like, okay, the way my voice sounds in my head.
Yep.
Sounds fine.
Yeah, it's fine. So why doesn't it sound that way when we do this? I know. Uh-huh. I feel like naturally I have like a very deep voice and maybe that makes for good recording. I don't know. People always say like, oh, you guys have the perfect voices. It's like, does that mean we don't have the perfect faces? Cause you know, which is fine. I don't need my face to be seen anyway, but that's a fun fact. So
I like it.
I said, I don't know anybody that actually likes the sound of their own voice. So,
right. Yeah. I don't know. I will say I'm excited because a couple weeks ago, my sister sent me a picture. She actually found a book while she was going through her stuff that she had of like random facts. So now I'm getting that to go through.
Perfect.
Now my dog is playing with his toy right by me. But yeah, so now I have a book that I'm going to use.
Oh, that's amazing. There's so much out there. And now you can just go start on page one.
Yes. And go down the list.
Yes. I know. Like I found a pretty solid website here that has tons of stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. But so I'll just save them all. But that one, I was like, yeah, as we were doing this, I was thinking, ew, I sound so like manly, but
I know I hate listening to I hate the way my voice sounds.
Same. So it's fine. Maybe it sounds really good. I'm just going to blame the bones in my head. So
right.
Go with that. But yeah, that's what we got this week. And we'll be back. We'll be back next week. I don't know where, but we're going to be somewhere in the Midwest.
We'll be somewhere. Yeah. Until next week, you guys know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe, download, follow, share, all the things to just do what you can to help us. We have a Patreon. If you want to join for $5, you get the episodes earlier as soon as I hit upload. It's usually Tuesday afternoon. You get a little bit of us chit-chatting in the beginning before we start our intro. So,
which could be good or bad in your opinion.
Right, yeah.
It helps us pay for our software and all their stuff that lets us bring this to you.
Exactly. So you guys, until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.